Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Thundercast. On today's show, we're going to be talking about a few games we've been playing recently. I'm Matthew Sorry, and joining me today I have Shane Ryan.
Hello.
And Sean Kelly.
Hello.
Okay, guys, so Sean's going to kick things off. Sean, what have you been playing recently that you want to talk about?
I've been playing Dragon's Crown
recently.
And I feel I find myself very conflicted about this game. Deeply conflicted.
Is this to do with reasons that other people have talked about?
Yeah.
It does have to do with reasons that other people have talked about.
So I guess it's bothering you then.
There are aspects about it that bother me, and there are aspects about it that I notice, I feel, are still sexist, but I can overlook.
Okay.
do you just mean that you're used to seeing it in video games, so it's easy just to think, you know, pass it off? Or to just, what kind of stuff, if you give examples, it probably...
Yeah.
Help.
Yeah, I was gonna get into examples. Mm-hmm. Well, first I should talk about like before the game came out. I mean, everyone saw the artwork for the Amazon and the Sorceress, which the Amazon wears like a tiny metal bikini, but is also gargantuan and muscly and not the quote unquote traditional ideal of femininity or beauty.
She has, like, 70-inch thighs, doesn't she?
Muscle on muscle, yeah. Yeah. And then the Sorceress is this kind of, like, stereotypical-looking witch, but then she has an enormous rack hanging out of her clothes. Kind of like Morrigan from Darkstalkers. Now, those things, they didn't necessarily bother me leading up to the game, because if you look at the other character designs in the game... All of the men in the game are also equally preposterously proportioned and exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like there was a consistency in the way that they were exaggerating and over-sexualizing all of their characters.
As the dwarf got a large package tucked away.
You know, I couldn't tell you, but I'm inclined to think that he does.
Okay.
Have one packed away.
Right.
But it's really the depiction of NPC women in the game that is troubling to me. There are some damsels in distress, and I mean, that in itself is a worn trope, as, you know, Anita Sarkeesian keeps telling us over and over again. But I'll just give you one specific example. There's one level where all the levels have multiple paths, two paths that branch about not even halfway into the level, and sometimes there's a character that denotes where that branch is. And at one point there's a static panel of this NPC character, and it's like you stumble upon a half-naked woman. And it's just a half-naked woman. There's no real explanation for why she's half-naked or anything like that. But she has this gossamer-like dress on top of her, and there's no real reason for it. And she's in a completely, like, splayed-out position. And the worst... If that isn't the worst part, the worst part is... the game has a mechanic where you can search the backgrounds using the right analog stick to find, like, hidden treasure and stuff. And it makes more sense because it was originally supposed to be just a Vita game, and you would just use your finger to tap on parts of the scene to find things. But, so during these static panels, you can still run your cursor around, and I witness other people in an online game poke her boobs and, like, make her giggle or something, and so yeah.
Right. That sounds a bit uncomfortable. I mean, you talk about the male depiction also being sexually exaggerated as well as the female depiction. And I suppose, I mean, the whole idea behind, if something is sexist, there's intent behind it. So I think the whole argument over why this is a problem is that the women are depicted as such, they're depicted as incredibly sexualized for male titillation, and the men are also depicted as these hulking brutes
right.
for male aspirations.
Right.
So you felt like that, and that's the case in this game.
Yeah, I do feel like that is the case.
Yeah.
and I think the real problem is that even if the main characters that you can play as are still really like hypersexualized and like objects of male affection, they also are to some degree empowering since they are these strong female characters. But like, mm-hmm. it's the way that they disempower all of the other female characters in the game is really uncomfortable at times.
So when you said you can poke her, does she actually react sort of designed so you can directly do that, or is it just that she giggles no matter where you click?
I can't say that I know that for sure. I haven't
okay.
I haven't prodded it very okay. much myself.
So how does she react? Does she just giggle, or is it like an animation where she's like, oh, I don't, sounds a bit odd.
Yeah, there's like a giggle and there's this subtle like animation that happens with it. It's not much, but it's mm-hmm. still more than there needs to be.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So that's been ruining your enjoyment of the rest of the game, would you say?
I wouldn't say ruining, because I still enjoy playing it.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Every once in a while when
it's an uncomfortable
like
thing
up,
in the background.
It's like, oh yeah, here's this part of the game that really is unnecessary. But the rest of the game, I think, is pretty good. I recently got to the point, like, you have to play about 8 plus hours before you can start playing the game online. And the game is vastly different once you start playing online, because it has kind of an interesting way that it funnels you into games. You go to this access point to access any of the dungeons in the game. Like, it's just this, the entire setup is there's one town and there's a bunch of dungeons, and in that respect it's almost like Diablo 1. Like, you just go and do the same things over and over again, and you get loot and you go back and you sell it and then you go back in or whatever. But in this case, you're not continually diving down floor after floor. There's only 9 dungeons, but each dungeon has multiple paths. And
okay.
I think what makes it strange with the online is, though, as far as I could tell, and I've only been playing online for a few hours at this point, is there's no way to actually meet up with players in town. So it's difficult to actually coordinate with players. Like, if there are specific quests that you want to do, because there are mission objectives in addition to just completing dungeons, it's like, oh, while you're in this dungeon, find this piece of treasure, or investigate this area, or kill X number of whatever. And you may not come across those specific objectives if the rest of your team doesn't know that you want to go to this part of the dungeon and do this thing. And sometimes when you join a game, when you just go into the dungeon area, you'll just be dumped into someone's game mid-level, and you're already be past the point where the thing you wanted to do was.
So you do get no choice. It just puts you into that situation. So it's kind of like it's a guessing game when you go into multiplayer.
Well, I haven't played any games yet with friends, so I don't know if there's any difference in that, but if you select to play with random people, it literally just dumps you into an existing room. Whereas if you just decide to sign into a dungeon yourself, then people will just be dumped into your game.
Okay, so kind of like Diablo would, but Diablo doesn't have the mission structure that would cause that kind of nuisance.
Right, and I mean, in Diablo, like, you can still meet up with people in town, and there is a way to decide, like, because the other thing is that after the point where you start playing online, unless you want to pay money in the game world to go to the dungeon specifically you want to. You go to a random dungeon.
Right. So it sounds like you don't have much control when you're joining online games.
No, not very much. Okay. Which, I mean, is good in the respect that it's easy to get paired with people that are above your skill level and fight a lot of... get a lot of treasure and gain a lot of experience. Like, the other thing that's nice about it is that it lets you play consecutive dungeons, so you can just kind of just continue adventuring as long as you can survive. Like, you can pack multiple bags for your character, and so if you exhaust all of the items you have in one bag in one dungeon, you use your next bag for the next dungeon, and that's kind of an interesting mechanic, but it just seems like a way to, I guess, keep you playing, because there's not a whole lot of since I said there's only 9 dungeons, it's just finding creative ways to get you to experience those dungeons as many different ways as possible.
Mm-hmm. So it takes the old kind of beat-em-up formula then, but then puts the split path on to kind of let you replay through and level up as you go. Like if Streets of Rage 2, for example, had a part in the park where you could go left and go, like, branch off. But do you have to play back through the level to do that?
Yes. You can't do both paths in one try.
Okay.
Usually the point where it wise is, you know, you can't go backwards. It's in a lot of ways, it's kind of like the structuring of stages in Guardian Heroes, because Guardian Heroes had these points where there was, like, a small dialogue tree or whatever, and you would decide, hey, you want to chase after these characters, and it would go one way, or... hey, I want to travel through the caves and avoid some combat or whatever. So, yeah.
Okay. But so you're enjoying the core mechanics of the game, but not necessarily some of the things around those mechanics.
Yeah, I think as a beat 'em up, it's pretty solid, and the animation is great, and it does suffer sometimes from too much stuff going on. Like, the animation is so beautiful, and like the special effects for all the spells from the sorceress and the wizard are really, really crazy. And it, you know, it has huge hulking bosses and...
And it sounds like genitals and other body parts take up half the screen as well.
You know, in the grand scheme of things, when the game is actually happening, they're pretty small.
Okay. Okay, then. It sounds interesting. Shane, what have you been playing recently?
Well, we're recording this on Sunday, but by the time it goes out, it'll be after Wednesday, so that means I can talk about Saints Row 4.
Yeah. I've seen you've been playing a lot of this on Steam.
I have been playing a lot of it. So I've now finished it. Currently writing up the review, which will probably be out by the time this goes up. It's pretty good, I can safely say. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of fun with the second one, although it was, for those that played it, it was really glitchy, and the engine was quite buggy, and there were times when it would just break, or things wouldn't work. But the third one, I tidied a lot of that up, had a great intro, but then it kind of didn't have the same level of charm as the second one had. But for this one, for the kind of finale to the story, they've taken the best elements of 2 and 3 and put them together. It's equally as ludicrous as the previous ones. So the basic setup is you save the Earth from a nuclear disaster, in turn become president, and then have to fight off an alien invasion. And that happens in about the first half an hour. And then it just gets increasingly stupid from there. But thankfully, the script writing and the dialogue is really witty. And I've been to see quite a few kind of comedies at the cinema this year, and none of them made me laugh as much as this did. In an actual laughing out loud sort of way, because some of it is just so daft. And
like, comedy in games is quite an interesting thing, because most funny moments in games come from a story that's been told or something, not necessarily what you're doing, intentionally. There's lots of unintentionally funny moments in what you're doing in games.
Yeah.
Glitches and things.
Well, but a mix of the
humor here. Yeah, does the humour here... It's a mix of the two, is it? Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, there's a lot of... Because you have your kind of... the saints still, they'll talk to you in between missions, or you have, for example, without giving too much away, kind of special missions per person where you kind of spend some time with them and you get a bit of backstory on them while you're doing a certain set mission. Mm-hmm. And an extension of that, again, without going out, it kind of lampoons on a lot of films and games. So it starts up and it kind of lampoons the end of Conan, where it's somebody sat on a crown about the fact that they're bored and stuff, and then kind of skips back. And it lampoons the Mass Effect romance system to a certain degree. But without mm-hmm. the fact that you have to do it for three games, and it's quite funny the way it does a lot of, I'm going to go into the jokes and stuff, but the way it sends a lot of that stuff up is really well done. And then at the same time, mm-hmm. you have basically superpowers in this one. So cars are out the window because you can run faster. You can fly around and jump. You can run and kick people and they just fly into the sky. So even stuff like that at times is funny when everything comes together and you're just throwing people about or dropping tanks on people. Mm-hmm. So basically the main kind of discipline to the game is that fun above all else. So rather than thinking, oh, well, we need to take these powers away from you because it's unbalanced. It's just, no, here, have more, and now have more. Okay, you want to freeze everything, blow everything up at once. Yep, you can do that. Just do this, do that, do the other. So you don't get any difficulty spikes because it's just constant fun for the whole thing. It's not to say there's not a few, again, bugs throughout. There's occasional missions where like an explosion would go off and you tumble through a wall and you can't get back in and things like that, which is unfortunately mm-hmm. what Saints Row has always been like. But it is really funny, which is unusual, again, for a video game for me to say that. It almost feels like it should be like in the comedy genre rather than blow stuff up. And if you've liked any of the others, you'll love this one. I had a lot of good times with it.
Now, I think I know the answer to this, but I've never played a Saints Row game before.
Mm.
Could I pick this one up and get straight into it?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it just doesn't stop, for the most part.
Yeah.
The third one had some pacing issues. It had a great beginning, but then after that, it didn't really work. Whereas in this one, the kind of I think the side missions are called distractions in this. So it's even that mm-hmm. self-aware. And if you do those sort of things, rather than just being like, oh, you've got to be an experience, you'll unlock guns earlier, or you get unlimited ammo on certain weapons, and some of the weapons are just completely stupid. And so there's always reasons to do stuff.
The dubstep gun.
Yeah, that is incredible.
I want to talk about the dubstep
gun.
Is
amazing.
Is that good?
Yes.
Yeah?
Another thing the Team Volition could do really well is take a joke that's about 2 years old and make it funny again. So in the third one, there's a guy who had like a vocoder and voice box when he spoke. And in this one, it's the dubstep gun, which shouldn't be funny, but it's hilarious every time. So it charges up and it basically plays it's got like an LP in it and it plays the song. And every time it goes wham, or there's like a bleep, it shoots out different sort of projectiles. So it's actually in time with the song as it plays. And if you power it up, everything just starts exploding. So there's just tanks and planes crashing everywhere. It's absolute chaos in the best possible way.
Amazing. Sounds good.
It is good. Had a lot of fun with it.
Okay. So Saints Row 4, sure that Shane's review is up by now, so go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my game that I've been playing, I'm going to talk about is Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, which just released this weekend on Xbox Live Arcade. It's a timed exclusive, I think. It's going to be out on Steam and PS3 in the near future, I think. This is from Starbreeze Studios, the guys who made the Chronicle Riddick games and the original Darkness. And you control, in it, the basic premise is that you control two brothers simultaneously. It's set in this fable-esque medieval fantasy land. It's a fairy tale, the story of this game. So you control these two brothers, one using the right stick of the joypad and the other using the left stick of the joypad, and you interact with the world using the trigger buttons. And that's the entire control setup. That's all you need to do throughout the game. And these brothers go on a quest to find the Tree of Life because their father is dying, and it's a grand fantastical quest that takes you through mines of trolls and forests of wolves and lots of other crazy places. There's lots of giants.
Did you just make those that sentence up on the fly then?
I did, yeah.
It rhymed pretty well.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I thought you were reading it or something.
No. Been thinking about that for days.
So it's like a twin stick puzzler, if that's the right description.
Yeah,
for
it's a little bit of a puzzle. There's a little bit of puzzling. It's mainly just an adventure game. The puzzles in the game aren't particularly hard. They're quite easy. It's really just doing the puzzles is the hardest thing because the control setup is quite difficult. And to begin with, it's a bit annoying the way that you control things because you're controlling two people at the same time and your brain just doesn't function that way. So you'll end up sending one person in the right direction. And they'll be walking along a path perfectly normally, but the other brother will be running into a wall or trying to run off the edge of a cliff or something. And you get lots of scenarios like that. But it took me about, I'd say it took me about two hours to adjust. And then I found it not easy, but I got into the swing of things. But considering that it's a, it's probably about 3.5 hours, 4 hour game, it's quite a short experience. It took me quite a while to get into it, into controlling it.
Okay.
But the best thing about the game, and the reason why it's been getting a lot of praise is, that control setup is actually, it actually reflects some of the things that happen in the narrative. And I don't want to give anything away because the story is the main reason really that you want to go and play this game because it is an interesting game. I've not really played anything like it before. I don't have any points of comparison in terms of the control setup and how that works. But yeah, it's awkward to play, but I think Starbreeze kept the puzzles quite simple and that was a good decision because the difficulty there is in how you control it.
So is it quite forgiving?
But it's a beautiful game. Sorry?
Is it quite forgiving then? If the controls are a,
yes, it
take
is.
A while to
get
used to.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to fail in most situations, I would say. You can, but it's pretty difficult. They've kept everything relatively simple.
Yeah, it sounds like the way you described it, it's designed so that you can't really fail. That's kind of not the point.
No. You can walk off cliffs every now and then, and there's points where you can fail. There's some, like, pseudo boss battles.
How do they work out?
Well, lots of them are with one creature and you have to move to certain parts of the environment and get one brother to pull one thing while the other one's doing something else, maybe distracting something.
Okay.
And again, they're kept relatively simple, so they're doable. Or at least I found them doable. But yeah, it's interesting the way that those mechanics and that control setup eventually comes to mirror what's happening in the game, and there's a really lovely end sequence that that's just a very nice thing, and it's something unique, and I've never seen it in game design before. But I would say that to begin with, the game is quite annoying to control.
It's a bit steep to get
into.
It's a
very beautiful game as well. Yeah, it's very difficult, but it's worth it if you can put up with that for a little while. So yeah, it's not a game where you've got a deep set of systems or a deep set of mechanics to get into. Literally, like there's very few things that your brothers can do. The older brother, the taller one, the stronger one, can pull on levers, whereas the younger one can't do that. The younger one can fit through small holes and grated doors where the older brother can't. So they do that. They have a setup where you can only use one of them for certain things,
the
doing
classic
certain things
bit of
in the
design.
Environment. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very common bit of design. Yeah, it's very interesting. Story's very interesting. Basic premise is it's fairy tale land and you're going to try and find the tree of life to get some water to save your dad. But it doesn't quite work out like that along the way, but I'm not going to go into that.
Okay.
Very worth playing. I think it's 1,200 Microsoft points at the moment. Yeah, very much worth it. One of the most interesting games and different games I've played this year. Some of the mechanics that they actually come up with for the brothers to interact with each other. There's a really interesting part where the brothers tie a rope to each other and they have to swing across these giant statues to get across this great chasm.
Okay.
And you're controlling, well, you control both of them at the same time, but you need to keep one trigger held down at all times to ensure that one brother is held on. And when you let go of the other one, the brother that you've let go of, falls and he swings in a big arc and you have to use that to get across, big gaps, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it works really well, and it's really interesting piece of design.
So, how would it compare to something like another abstract kind of adventure game, like Journey? Is it more traditional than that?
It's not more traditional. See, like, it looks quite like Fable, but say a game like Fable, you have this big open world, you have lots of systems, you have the magic, you have your gunplay, you can evolve your characters. It's not like that. It's like Journey in the sense that it is a linear adventure. You're always on a path and you've got a limited amount of interactivity. It's kept very, very simple and it's trying to tell quite an emotional, quite a sad story. It's like Journey in that sense, I would say. It's also like Journey in the sense that, like I talked about before, you don't have a deep set of mechanics. Every interaction is very limited, and you'll do, like, I've talked about that rope mechanic where the brothers tie a rope between themselves, so they're attached to each other. That's literally used once in the game. And there's so many things like that that are done once in the game, and then you move on straight away. So it's something quite different. I haven't seen that very often in games.
It's good to see that team doing something, I suppose, if you wanted to call it low-key, I can't think of a better phrase at the moment, just doing a digital-only title with, you know, using a realistic budget to kind of focus in on that one key idea that somebody on the team's obviously had, rather than trying to make it into some massive, huge blockbuster game and then obviously not getting the funding for it in that way.
That's the thing. It's definitely an experiment, and I think it's a successful experiment. I think it works really well. And they've clearly, like, got a small team together to focus on that, and it's obviously a cheaper game than lots of Starbreeze's previous games. And that's the kind of thing that I enjoy seeing from a studio like this. Talented guys and girls.
Refreshing to play a game that's a bit shorter, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
It wouldn't have suited being any longer as well, I don't think.
No, it's the right length. No padding.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay. So there are our three games we've been playing recently. If you want to let us know what you think of any of those games, head on over to thunderboltgames.com and check out the forums. Or alternatively, contact us on Twitter @_thunderbolt. Or email us at podcast@thunderboltgames.com. From me, it's goodbye. And from Shane.
Aha!
I'm from Sean.
I don't know what the hell that was. Bye.
I'm pretty sure it was Alan Partridge reference, I think.
It was. I'm about to go see the film.
All right.
Sean Poy still doesn't get it. Doesn't matter.
Alpha Papa.
Bye.